This is the Relevant Podcast.
It's the week of June 5th, 2020, and it's the Relevant Podcast. I'm your host, Cameron Strang, and this week it's going to be a little bit unique of an episode. Joining me from Loverland, Virginia, is Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
From Austin, Texas, author, podcaster, Jamie Ivey.
Hey, guys.
And from Nashville, Tennessee, artist and producer, Derek Miner.
What up, Dom?
Coming up later, we talk to Maverick City Music. If you don't know this diverse community of songwriters from Atlanta yet, you're about to. We're going to talk to them about their new album, Maverick City Volume 3, and how they are breaking the mold in worship music. Love Maverick City Music.
We love them too at our house, Cameron.
Unbelievable. I'm excited about that. Obviously, this week is a unique time in our country, and we wanted this episode to reflect that. So a lot of the normal stuff that we do, a lot of the really dumb stuff, Jesse, we're gonna not do that this week. And we wanted to have a little bit more of an intentional conversation about what's going on. To join us for this part of the show, we wanted to bring on our friend, hip-hop artist, spoken word artist, activist, podcaster from L.A. Welcome to the show, Propaganda.
What's up, y'all? West, the world's on fire.
Oh, man. and also joining us, I wanted to bring in Tyler Huckabee from Relevant. He's our senior editor and the host of Relevant Daily. He'll be bringing us some updates later. Hey, Tyler.
Yeah. Hey, everyone.
Hey, so, Prop, I appreciate you joining us, man. I mean, yeah. It's been a tough week for a lot of people. A lot is happening. It seems like every day the narrative is changing, and I just wanted to see how you're doing. What are you thinking today in the midst of everything going on?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a, you know, this was already such a normal year with just regular life that was just so mundane. I was so bored, you know, it's like there's nothing special about this year, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, right? I mean, obviously, like, you know, my emotions are all over the place. My emotions probably match, you know, the emotions of probably America and the world writ large, you know, but obviously specifically Black America. You know, I was already on edge because of, you know, coronavirus and what was happening with specifically the Black community in coronavirus, you know what I'm saying? And I just felt like I got set back, you know, 40 years. And I say 40 years, you know, because I think of like my own father's social, you know, justice work as a Black Panther, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, like 80 years, you know, like, how are we here again? You know,
Prop, you know, we're recording this on Wednesday, and you know, the protests, you know, have been going on for several days now. And really, there's sort of a new news cycle every day. So, you know, when people hear this, you know, things around the country could evolve in a lot of different directions. You know, from where we are now compared to where we are even just over the weekend, and you've kind of seen some of these new voices enter the conversation, even if they just want to enter and listen and learn more.
Yeah.
Do you have hope about what can be done from here that could, you know, be positive institutional and systemic changes that can actually take hold?
You know, I do in a number of ways. I think that, you know, there's a faction of our country that's just entrenched in our silos. It is what it is, you know, and there's just, the world is different now, you know, and it's post-truth. You know, it's we're all about, like, you know, confirmation bias. Is that what it's called? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of like already, there's a part of the world that's just that. Then there's what I feel the greater majority of and I'm just going to cut to it. The greater majority of white people that are going, okay, I'm out of excuses. Like, how are we still here? You know what I'm saying? That are just like, okay, I'm sorry it took me so long to believe you. Oh my God, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You know what I mean? Which I think has a lot to do, I guess I can speak specifically with American church. I think it has a lot to do with the fact with, you know, our voices being raised. People like Derek, people like Lecrae, people like myself, people like Relevant, you know what I'm saying? There have been like, you know, hammering away for years and years and years. And we sit on the shoulders of people like, you know, James White, you know what I'm saying? We sitting on his shoulders. We sitting on James Cone's shoulders. We sitting on these shoulders of people who've been hammering at evangelicalism for a long time. You know what I'm saying? And then now with these videos and the continual, you know what I'm saying? You can't keep saying these are isolated incidents when they happen all the time, everywhere, in every state, in every variable, every possible variation of black men has been murdered, you know? And I think just finally the math is starting to happen and people are going, you know, well, let's do something. The amount of allies that I'm seeing, you know, back to 2000, you know, 12 and 13 when, you know, Trayvon Martin, you know, I mean, Oscar Grant was murdered and I got uninvited to a bunch of conferences, you know, we talked vocal about that. You know what I'm saying? This is a different story. Now I'm getting brought in, you know what I mean? Right. You Derek laughing because he know.
Bro. Yeah, I know. I lost a lot of bags during that time.
I lost a lot. You know what I'm saying?
It's like on Sonic when you get hit by a character or whatever and all your rings fall out your pocket. Like, that's how I felt.
It's like, that's what happened when Oscar Grant died. I was like, wow. I used to sell 1,000 tickets in this city. I don't know. Where am I at? You know what I'm saying? In the beginning of this decade, if this would have happened, I would have lost 4,000 followers, right? This now I've gained 7,000 followers because of just how culture just kept ratcheting up. You know what I'm saying?
Do you think that in the middle of all this, because I feel like we've seen that even Irrelevant, like when we posted about what was happening with Trayvon Martin, even later on with Tamir, people got mad at us. And that's not, there's definitely been a change in how many clicks these articles get and people responding positively to them instead of very negatively. That seems good. But then when you start moving into things like, well, what do we do? Like, what's the action? Yeah. What's the response going to be? I feel like that's when people still get nervous, because when you suggest things like, when you say we want to be radically for racial equality and changing the justice system, people are like, yes. And you say, so here's what that's going to look like, possibly demilitarizing the police. I don't know if we want to be that radical about it. You know, I think there's like the idea that things should change, but the tangible action steps still feel like, well, can't police just kind of start being nicer magically? Wouldn't that work too?
So it's funny. It was funny when I was growing up, my mom had this diet. That one of her friends had told her to try. So it was this idea that grapefruit is great with your metabolism, right? So it was eat whatever you want, but then eat a grapefruit afterwards, and you're going to lose 20 pounds, right? And she tried it, and it didn't work. And that's what I think is kind of where a lot of people are. Like, they want change without the pressure of saying, no, I can't just have a magic grapefruit diet. Like, I'm actually going to have to eat vegetables. I'm actually going to have to go work out for 30 minutes a day. And I think that's what you're talking about, Tyler, as far as the implications of that. I think sometimes we don't realize that. And well, we know this because we oftentimes you hear freedom costs something. Like, it costs something, and it's going to cost something.
Yeah.
To change what's happening. But it's either let's control our costs and say, hey, let's fix this area, fix this area, fix this area. It's going to cost something so that riots don't happen. And then you have all these weirdos in the riots busting up black owned businesses and busting up all kind. Like, it's costing more for us not to fix the problem. It's costing more for us not to fix it, you know?
Yeah. And I think, again, just like, the best parallel, you know, history doesn't repeat. I don't believe it repeats, but it definitely rhymes. I think that's like a best way to look at it. Like, scenarios are so different. Time is so different. Where we are as a culture is so different, you know, but there are things we could pull from, you know? So like, the best way, I think, again, is the level of tumultuous that the 60s were, you know,
right,
down to the space launch. Like, here's what's even more crazy. I don't, like, you know what I'm saying? Like Gil Scott-Heron writing a song called Whitey on the Moon. You know what I'm saying? Because in the middle of the civil rights movement, we landed on the moon. So he wrote this song, and that's what happened Monday. I'm like, this is so crazy. The country's on fire. NASA just launched. SpaceX just launched. And I'm like,
it's like Groundhog Day, bro.
It's just Groundhog Day out this mug. So, but anyway, like, at the end of that, what the Civil Rights Act was at the time, which we think is so stupid, is basic. They thought it was radical. You know what I'm saying? And the version that actually came out had a lot of its teeth taken. You know what I'm saying? So what we consider radical now, I think a lot of times has to do with just the wording or where the culture is. Unfortunately, because we're in this information age and we want a confirmation bias, we want the idea to come from our silo. If the idea don't come from my silo, I feel like I can't support it. You know, so I can't say, you know what I'm saying? If you're right, you know, if you lean conservative, you know, you just feel like I hated Trump, but I can't vote for a Democrat. Like, I just can't vote for really. Like, I can't do it. You know what I'm saying? If you're that person, if Joe Biden stands up and he says, listen, all I'm saying is police shouldn't have automatic assault rifles that we made for the insurgents in Iraq. Like, the police shouldn't have that. You're like, that's actually a great idea, but Joe Biden said it. You know what I'm saying? So, like, you feel me? So, like, that to me jumps up to a higher discussion of the heart and soul of the person to be like, yo, like, why you care what mouth it came out of? Yesterday, I saw Pat Robertson say that, you know, which I was like, what timeline are we on? That Pat Robertson stood up and said, you know, the same guy that said 9/11 was God judging America, right? Was the dude that said, maybe the way that Trump is handling this is just, it's kind of sounds kind of cruel. Maybe you shouldn't stand in front of somebody else's church that you don't go to and hold a Bible up and make a statement about war. Pat Robertson, the Right Wing Watch, posted a link about Pat Robertson telling the president maybe he was out of line. I'm like, so that's the type of stuff to me when more things like that happen and us who lean in the progressive circles need to go, you know what? I don't know, man. I think old Pat got a point. I think he's crazy, but I mean, I agree with him here. You know what I'm saying?
That's the thing that seems different this time is that like you mentioned the militarization of local police. There's a bipartisan bill happening right now to stop the sale of military equipment to local jurisdictions, because that's what's been happening is like excess military supply would be sold to local police. And so there's a bipartisan bill that's moving forward to stop that. And so you're starting to see like, maybe there is some common ground that, you know, things can actually change. I want to ask y'all both, I've been looking a lot on a lot of the Christian black leaders and artists on Instagram who are speaking out. I'm noticing in the comments is a lot of support. And then there's this homeschooled white kid.
Hey,
sorry, Tyler. No offense.
Leave Tyler alone. That's my dog.
That was anonymous.
That's my dog.
No. No, Tyler. You good.
Let's call this hypothetical clueless person T. Huckabee. No. Tyler.
No, but like I'll see them say, and they are coming from a place of faith conviction saying, no, all lives matter. And obviously they don't know because the bubble they live in, they don't know what they're saying when they say that. Or they'll say, I've seen this argument in the threads of, well, listen, the Bible says that this sin and this division will just be with us till the end of time. And the only answer is Jesus. The only answer is heaven. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so why fight? Right.
Yeah.
And so now number one, I've seen y'all and a lot of leaders like start to engage this ignorance, which I am appreciative of. And I want to talk about that. I saw something that Dr. Darius Daniels, who's a friend of the show, said he had his podcast this week. He has Dr. Eric Mason on, and they talked about what's going on, and two brilliant thinkers. And Darius posted something on Instagram this week talking about, and I'm thinking it's trying to educate that mindset where, listen, we're not saying that we can legislate away racism, right? Racism is a heart issue. And Darius said, now, I know that I can't change how somebody sees me. When I walk into a store, that person could be racist, but that doesn't affect me in any way. And so I can't change their mind. But what we're talking about is when they act on their racism, that becomes injustice. And that does require laws and legislation to protect me and to protect citizens from other people acting on their racism. So we said, yes, racism is a heart issue, but injustice is something that we can fight for.
It's law.
Right? Yeah. Law. And so like that interesting parallel, because I think a lot of these comments are coming from a place of saying, hey, we're believers and we can't legislate racism. Right? And like, no, that's not what we're talking about.
Yeah. Here's what's funny though. By definition, you know, I'm not going to undo his point is correct. Right. But from a sociological, I'm putting my teacher hat back on right now. Like from a sociological cultural studies perspective, understanding the difference between a prejudice, a discrimination, and racism. Like your prejudice is what we're talking about. Like you have, because of this person's skin, I think less of them. Right. And they are not, I'm not well. That's a personal opinion. You're just an idiot. I don't know what to tell you. Right. Discrimination is when the individual begins to act upon that. Right. Now, sometimes a discriminatory act is normal for survival. Just like you run a company. I'm going to hire this person and not that person. Well, I guess in some ways you discriminated against this person, right? Because you chose that one. You know, you discriminated against your blue t-shirt by wearing your black t-shirt. I don't know. Like, so there's a part of it but when it has to do with the individual based on a sinful prejudice, right? Then that's that person. Now, when you take those acts and then you make it law, right? To be able to function where the law discriminates based on your prejudice, you now have a racist system, right? Mm-hmm. So when you say I can't legislate racism, I'm like, that's exactly what racism is. Hmm. Racism is laws made to prefer based on your prejudice. Right. So like you said to that young dude, yeah, you're right, man. I can't tell you not to hate black people, but I can make sure you don't make laws that make it okay for you to hate black people. Right. And that's what I'm here to fight you over. Now, like you said to that young, you know, not so Tyler, we'll call him Chad if it makes you feel better.
Not Chad.
But I feel like Chad's more like a frat boy.
You know,
Chad's a frat boy.
Chad, Tyler has a brother named Chad.
Chad's not old school. Chad's a frat boy, but we'll just call him Chad to make you feel better. So maybe Hunter. We'll call him Hunter.
I can live with Hunter.
Hunter and Tanner. What's up with white people naming their kids
Tanner
after
is
like
my brother's name?
Serious? Tyler, Tanner, Hunter. Y'all name just medieval job descriptions. Like, why y'all name your kids medieval jobs?
Prop, this whole analogy is getting weirdly specific.
Okay.
Just say it to my face, Prop. I'm right here. Let's have it out.
So Tyler, homeschool kid, you know, that says this statement, like, for one, my mental health, and me and Derek are in a 10-year long group text with all of our friends, you know what I mean? And part of our own protecting our own energy and mental health is we don't engage, you know what I'm saying, for our own health, right? But this time, when I got the comment, I was so proud of myself. I actually screenshotted and sent it to the group text because I was like, I'm so proud of myself, right? So I was like, hey, man, I understand based on the world that you exist in why it would be so weird for you to see people who proclaim to love Jesus functioning and speaking the way that they do. Unfortunately, it's going to take you years and years of intentional work, right? And study and intentional relationships to understand how grossly misinformed your comment is. And I'm sorry, I'm not gonna be able to correct it on a comment thread. But you got a lot of work to do.
The thing for me is I don't really, especially when it's a kid, I'm not gonna engage. Yeah. I mean, you don't even know any, like when I was 16, I didn't know anything. I thought I knew everything.
Totally.
I don't know anything. I just know what I was taught. So that is a reflection of what his parents and his school and his pastors have taught him. And they quite honestly have failed him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like they, and it's probably because they've been failed, right? Like it's not intentional. It's just, you know what? That's the problem with trying to apply the black and white unnuanced idea of good versus evil to everything, right?
Yeah.
We do that with Christianity and it's like there's good guys, there's bad guys. We don't believe in nuance, but the problem with that is when you have to have nuance, you're just totally unequipped. And it's just like he's unequipped to be able to deal in nuance. And quite honestly, you know, like, the kid doesn't probably even believe that because, you know, again, we could bring up anything like with the, you know, with abortion. Like no one just says, no one in that circle says, man, abortion is going to be here from now to the end of time.
Yeah. Like, just, no one says that.
Let's forget it. Just whatever, man.
Right. Yeah.
This is not a fleshly fight. This is a spiritual fight. Just if we pray enough, people are going to stop aborting babies. Like he doesn't even believe that framework. he just believes it for this particular situation, but he doesn't even know that he doesn't even see the hypocrisy in his thought.
Yeah, the cognitive dissonance of that.
Exactly.
And I bet you for you, and I know you get the same DMs I get to where you're like, you get DMs from those kids when they turn 20 and now they're off in college and they're like, man, I've been listening to your music for the last 5 years. I think I finally get it now. I'm sorry for this stuff. Like I get those DMs too, but it's like, so that was a slow burn though. Mm. You got,
absolutely.
It's 5 years, it's four albums.
Absolutely.
And it's not just my four albums. It's mine plus Trips, plus Derek's, plus Show, plus Smooth.
One of the things I've noticed, we're just watching the footage of all the protests around the country. And again, we're recording this on Wednesday, so we don't know what's happening the next few days, but it seems like it's shifted from raw anger and just outrage in the initial days to now it seems more organized. It seems more strategic. It seems more like the peaceful protests are like focused on clear calls to action and pressuring specific things that they want to see happen, which I feel like that's when the movement shifts toward actual change could happen. Because I think back to like in the last 5 years, you know, young people, the youth protested and were outraged around school shootings and the lack of like gun control and things like that. But there wasn't agreement up the generational lines, right? Legislators didn't listen because of money. But now all of a sudden we're seeing the movement is calling for specific things that then we're starting to see indications. Again, this is midweek, that legislators are actually also speaking out. I mean, seeing police chiefs take a knee or walk with the protesters saying, I am with you.
Yeah.
We want reform in our ranks. We will hold ourselves accountable. Mm-hmm. Like, when did that happen before?
I have a friend that's in the military. He says when he was in Iraq, he's like, you can't engage people in war just fire shots off just whenever you want.
Yeah, allowed to. Yeah,
you have to talk to somebody of higher rank and say, do I have permission to engage this conflict? These are people that you're literally at war with.
And you still gotta ask.
You still have to ask. So how could the military in foreign countries have that level? They have to have that level of control. But over here, there's no accountability. You could just fire shots whenever you want.
Not only that, the vast majority of when you look at the psychology of military, the vast majority shoot over a person's head because it's something in us that don't want to kill another human.
Mm.
So that when you talk about rooting out systemic change, so police forces like Houston police, who have been really active in this protest and committing to real change and being on the streets and taking off their riot gear. Like they're taking off riot gear and they're just like, okay, no, I'm out here as a citizen, just like you. We want to see this. People, the same thing happened in Atlanta. Police are coming out there without their riot gear, without their weapons. And they're just like, look, we're here too. You know what I'm saying? I'm still wearing my badge because it is what it is. I'm proud of what I chose to do. You know what I'm saying? But there are some systemic changes that need to happen. And so again, like you said, Cameron, to your point, you can have a good cop in a bad system, right? Mm-hmm. So our argument is not necessarily, are there good cops? Our argument is, how good is this system? And then the last thing I would suggest for police forces is y'all need to learn how to check for white supremacists. Because they're there. You know what I'm saying?
They don't have to learn how to check. They know that they're there. It's just the idea of that brotherhood is more important. You can't tell me you can work with somebody for 12 years and not know something that important. That's impossible.
You mentioned Atlanta, the Atlanta police officers. Yeah. This is the next step. Again, we're recording that on Wednesday. So this Tuesday night, there was an incident this week where police had a confrontation with a college student, with some college student protesters, and one of the students, 22, was violently tased and injured, greatly injured. Six Atlanta officers were then charged after that confrontation and held accountable, or they will be held accountable. And I think that is another
thing we ask that
needs to happen across the country at every level, to say there's accountability and consequences to the people who cross the line, who are not doing the job the way it was designed to be done.
Yeah. Yo, if that type of response was the typical response,
we
wouldn't even be here. Right. Like that's just the reality. We would not we wouldn't even be here.
Because we know justice would be served.
Right. Yeah. It's like, forget the economic discrimination and real estate discrimination and all of that. It's just like, yo, we're watching on videotape people that look like me be murdered. And then you find a way to sashay out of the
somehow it's not a murder.
charging these people. But I know people that have been in jail for an ounce of weed. Mm-hmm. You just like an ounce of weed or they were just there. Like they were, you know, they were considered accomplices because they're in the car with the wrong person that they didn't know had done something crazy. Yeah. But you could literally videotape this guy choking the life out of someone, and then there's a question as to what should be done. Therein lies one of the big problems as far as justice is concerned. It's not like what we talked about earlier, it's not the issue of racism. Yeah, racism sucks. Quite honestly, I don't care what you think about me. Just don't kill me. Like, that's the facts of the situation.
I don't know if you guys read the latest Malcolm Gladwell book, Talking to Strangers, but the impetus for him writing that was the death of Sandra Bland, who, you know, after a very routine traffic stop, you know, allegedly rolling through a stop sign. She was on her way to a job interview, was completely sober-minded, and, you know, but the interaction with the police officer escalated to the point where, you know, she's found dead in her jail cell 2 days later. Yeah. The police officer was white, Sandra Bland was black. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that book really outlines in a lot of ways that what ultimately were well-intentioned but misguided policies that were never kind of revisited objectively with police policies and procedures, you know, led to confrontations like this. And, you know, I kind of stepped away from reading that book, and really it was a reminder of this, you know, as someone who wants to see change and not for more, you know, people to die, you know.
Yeah.
It was really a reminder of the importance of like the civic responsibility at the local level too. You know, sheriffs are elected officials. They're not appointed. Mm-hmm. And
we put ours in jail here.
Yeah. And so I think this too, hopefully, you know, there's a lot of different kind of generational values that I think are coming to light. And you see the younger people are, the more civically engagement minded they seem to be. They seem to be very passionate about the democratic process. Is it a perfect process? No. Can it can it be improved? Yes. But, you know, is there ways to, you know, engage at the local level that can put people in place that really understand, you know, from a, you know, prop, you know, you're kind of talking about the nuances of policies and procedures that, yes, there the church and community, we need to address racism, but you know, there also is ways that we can institute changes even on the local level. So that,
well, you know, Jesse, you mentioned this generation being civically minded and active. The problem is statistically they're still not voting. You know what I mean? They're speaking out, but they're not going to the voting booths. And so you have all this momentum, and then like in action come election day. One thing that gave me hope this week about specifically that process you're talking about is in the Senate, Van Jones has talked about this. He's like, listen, I'll work across the line for things that I believe in. You know, I have my right wing and my left wing. And he said, there are very few elected officials who I would say you're a bigot, right? They may have racist thoughts or whatever, but like he said, there's one senator who's an actual bigot and his name is Steve King. And and he's up for election this past Tuesday in the state of Washington. And he said, where, I'm sorry,
Iowa.
Iowa. And he said, where, how that election goes will tell me the direction where that America is choosing. And he got ousted. He was in the Senate for decades and he got ousted. He got voted out of office. And that's what you're talking about, Jesse. You want to see change? You want to get rid of the bigots? Vote them out.
Jamie, you know, you have an incredible and diverse family and you have children who are approaching voting age and I'm sure are, you know, have been watching what's been transpiring around the country like we all have. What are some conversations that's been happening around your home and the perspectives of your children who are also people of color?
You know, they're hard conversations and we actually don't keep the news on a lot in our house for just a lot of different reasons. And so we get to control the narrative that our kids hear, which I'm really appreciative of as well. But the hard conversations to me, honestly, so we have super hard conversations with our children who are black and brown. But, you know, I have a 16-year-old who's white. And I think one of the conversations that I've really enjoyed right now that a lot of people are having is not just how do we make sure that our kids aren't racist, but that they're anti-racist, that they, you know, they use their voice to speak up against things. And I've been talking with my 6-year-old son, who's white, a lot about you have been put in this family, like all of our kids have been put in this family, and you have a high responsibility to speak up for your siblings and to speak up for what is wrong and to speak up for what is right. You know, those are important conversations that I think every parent should be having. It's just we have to have them in our house because he has a little bit more proximity to black and brown people that a lot of white kids don't have. And so I'm always saying, I've said it here before, is that white parents have to be having these conversations. I read something the other day from a black woman that says, I shouldn't have to keep telling my son how to not get murdered. You need to tell your son how to not kill my kids. And that was a rough thing to read, you know? And so I think these conversations matter that we're not just talking about like, oh, we love Jesus. We used to not see color, but now we see color and everybody's beautiful. Like it's just that, you know, kumbaya, but it has to go deeper for that. And I'm even having to go deeper with my 6-year-old white son because he has siblings that this greatly affects.
Well, that was a lot to unpack. I appreciate this conversation. It's an ongoing one. Let's take a quick break. Hang with us for one more segment. And let's take a quick break and come back. And Tyler is going to bring us a couple of news updates from the week.
I'm a young black man.
Listening to I'm a Young Black Man, a song that went viral after Kedron Bryant posted it on Instagram this week, and you're listening to the remix by producer Dim Joints. This song has been stuck in my head for a week and a half. I can't get it out of my head. It's incredible. All right, Tyler, I'm not going to give you a jingle. Tell us what's going on this week.
Do want to reiterate before I bring a couple of news items that that we recorded this on Wednesday. Obviously, a very fast move. This country is going, the brakes, somebody cut the brakes. The roller coaster is just going.
Because the thing about it, if we recorded this 4 days ago,
yeah,
the mood would have been completely different.
It's different.
Because I mean, like both prop you and Derek, I mean, have told me in the last 24 hours, I'm feeling a little bit better, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're not through, but that wasn't the case a few days ago. So you're right, Tyler. I'm glad you acknowledge that because we don't know where this listener will be this weekend when they're listening. So
yeah, mm-hmm. Assuming we still have a functioning democracy by Friday, these are the stories that we feel like, that I feel like today we'll still have some relevance for where listeners are at. The big one is the state of Minnesota is going to be bringing civil rights charges against the Minneapolis Police Department. The video, obviously, that we've been talking about here has ignited a lot. And in addition to bringing a former officer, Derek Chauvin, in and charging him with third-degree homicide, Governor Tim Walz and the Minnesota Department of Human Rights announced the charges and an investigation into the police department's last decade, 10 years, of policies and practices to determine where and how systemic discrimination towards people of color has occurred. The governor said, quote, "We know that deeply seated issues exist. I know it because we saw the casual nature of the erasing of George Floyd's life and humanity. We also saw the reaction of the community. They expected nothing to happen because nothing happened so many times before." Yeah. So state human rights commissioner, her name is Rebecca Lacero. She will be leading the investigation. She's implementing interim practices for the Minneapolis Police Department, which will be followed by new long-term measures informed by the findings of her investigation. Over the last 10 years, Minneapolis Police Department has faced a larger than average number of accusations of racial discrimination. This happened even after they promoted Madaria Arredondo to become its first Black police chief back in 2017. Now, Arredondo had been part of a group of officers who sued the police department for discriminatory practices back in 2007. That was settled. Now he's police chief. But in the last 3 years, there has not been an appreciable decrease in the accusations. That I also want to point out, because it is relevant to this, the anger has flared over the official autopsy of George Floyd, which blamed his underlying health conditions, their words, for his death and made no mention of asphyxiation. So there was an independent autopsy that Floyd's family brought, and that found that he did die of asphyxiation from sustained pressure on his neck, which, what? I mean, is very obvious.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow. Yeah. I'm surprised. I can't believe that someone standing on somebody's neck for 9 minutes killed him. Wow. I never would have thought.
It pretends to be shocked.
I never would have thought that was the case. Oh, my gosh. I believe that bull about the diabetes killing him.
Oh, my gosh. How dumb do they think we are? That was like, the point. He happened to have a heart attack in the middle of
it. I said my man died from lupus, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Good Lord. Tyler, I saw the Minnesota Governor Tim Walz said when he announced that they were going to be bringing civil rights charges against the Minneapolis Police Department. He also said, and I love this quote, he said, "My administration will use every tool at our disposal to deconstruct generations of systemic racism in Minnesota. This effort is one of many steps to come in our effort to restore trust with communities that have been unseen and unheard for far too long." That is what we're talking about. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't, yes, we want to see justice served in this one specific case and accountability for the four officers. But the fact that we've got to dig deeper to the systemic issues and that the people in at every level of government is applying pressure and this has come to light. I mean, this is the positive outcome of the protests, right? This is the first step of something that needs to trickle out way wider than this. But like, to me, that's what we're talking about, right? I mean, this is what we want to see happen, right? I mean,
it's that, but you know, for me, the test is going to be what happens 6 months from now.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. what, don't talk about it, be about it. You know what yeah, I mean?
Right.
But definitely I think the fact that someone at that high of a level will acknowledge that, shows some progress for
some,
sure.
Some progress, definitely. Right.
Shows
right.
some progress, and that matters, but definitely, I'm like what James would say, in the Bible, I need to see the action.
There you go.
You know, to match it, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah. Especially for people, for listeners who we have up there in Minneapolis, Minnesota, hold your politicians up there. We all need to be holding our local leaders absolutely. Accountable. But, absolutely. But now that you've got, he has a line, he's put the bar.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. This is what we're going to do.
Right. He said it. Now we can publicly, mm-hmm. so now we can hold him accountable to it. Right.
Absolutely.
I mean, like you said, where is he in 6 months? Well, let's keep pressure on and see where he's at in 6 months.
Did want to point this out too. This is a little bit connected. It is connected, but it's a little bit different, I suppose. So I think we all remember Just Mercy, which was a book that then became a movie last year. It's the story of modern day death penalty abolitionist Bryan Stevenson. That movie, which we got to cover quite a bit for Relevant, is actually now going to be free on all streaming platforms through the end of the month. Wow. The movie's official Twitter account announced the decision yesterday, saying the message of black equality, police brutality, and corruption in the justice system makes it a resource for people who want to learn more. So anywhere you go, iTunes, Amazon, Vudu, Google Play, any other streaming platform, you can go on and rent it for free, thanks to the folks there. It stars Michael B. Jordan as Stevenson, a lawyer whose work in the American South led him to become a leader in the fight to reform the criminal justice system and abolish the death penalty. You also got Jamie Foxx in there, Brie Larson's in the movie. It's a really good movie.
It's a great flick.
I thought it was, I wasn't quite sure how they're going to make a movie out of that book because it doesn't necessarily lend itself to a narrative, but they did a good job. I thought it was excellent. When we talked to Michael B. last year, he told us, quote, "I want to be part of the change. That's what's important to me, especially at this time in my life as a black man in America. These issues directly affect me and my community." So if you are interested, if you've been moved by the past week of protests, you want to learn more, you sort of want to start to inform yourself, and you haven't seen or read the book, you can do both, should do both, and now you can watch it for free. So no excuses.
Yeah. Tyler, that book, Just Mercy, is the book that I'm like, every American needs to read this book. Terrific. And even if you see the movie, there's so much more in the book that obviously, like yourself, didn't lend itself to a movie. Highly, highly, highly recommend you go get the book and read it. And it's a great read. It's good.
And it's Michael B. Jordan. Everything he's in is good. And I've said it before, it's time for him to drop the B and just take the Michael Jordan thing. The Last Dance has aired. We've seen it. Okay, we got it. There's a new MJ in town.
Last just Dance drop your
the B.
Name.
Just drop the B and own it, Michael Jordan.
But Jamie Foxx stole every scene he was in.
Yeah, he's incredible. In that movie. He's one. Not to get too far into the, you know, cultural analysis, but he's one actor that sometimes I think is too funny for his own good. And what I mean by that is, like, he's so smart and so funny that people, that's what they think of him. It's like, oh, Jamie Foxx is hilarious. Every time I see him, he is like, he's sharp, he's funny, and they think of him as a comedian when really you're like, watch, you know, he had another movie that was, you know, I felt like pretty underrated, that he's, you know, starting with Robert Downey Jr. years ago, that was about homelessness in Los Angeles. Oh, he was awesome in it, you know, and Just Mercy, you're like, dude, Jamie Foxx is a legit
actor, man.
Yes. Like, he's hilarious and great in all he does, but it's like, dude, he is a legit, like, dramatic actor when it, you know?
Oh, I mean, think back to Ray. I mean, when he played Ray Charles.
Yeah.
He won an Oscar. Yeah. I mean, he's an Oscar-winning actor. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's unbelievable.
And should have gotten an Oscar for Django, in my opinion.
Great. Django is my favorite. Yeah.
So there's a lot more news obviously happening, and we're covering it every day at relevantmagazine.com, and Tyler's bringing it to us on the daily podcast, Relevant Daily. So go check that out. Thanks for that update, Tyler. And Prop, thanks for joining us for this conversation, man.
Yeah, dude.
I appreciate your voice and your leadership in this space. And You know, I know it's incredibly exhausting and hard time for many of you guys, Derek, too. I mean, who so many people are looking to right now. I know it's difficult. On one hand, it's like it's numbing. Yeah. It's like here we are again. But I just want you to know, like, we need you guys, and we need you to challenge status quo, and we need you to push things, and we're listening. And there's thousands of people following, and it's important what you guys are saying and doing right now. And I appreciate, I appreciate you sticking your neck out. I appreciate you guys taking a risk and pouring into this conversation. It means a lot. So it's making a difference, guys.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Well, stay tuned. Up next, Maverick City Music joins us.
I have a dream that's similar to Dr. King's. Let freedom ring in the streets. I have a dream that there was nothing left to protest, because all of God's people would treat each other equal. I have a dream that our blood-stained blocks with young men shot are now clean. No more shoulders cried on with mother's tears. I have a dream that the Me Too movement was not needed, and all of our women like queens, they were treated. I have a dream that our soldiers came home and the war stopped. Prison wasn't.
You're listening to Derek Minor. As I Have a Dream, it's from the album The Trap, which he released in 2018, and is ever so timely today. Well, this episode is brought to you by Bombas. Bombas makes the most comfortable socks in the history of feet. They've reimagined every little detail of the socks we wear every day to make them way more comfortable and even purposeful by giving back to the most vulnerable members of our community. For every pair of socks you purchase, Bombas will donate a pair to someone in need. The generosity of Bombas customers have allowed them to donate over 34 million pairs of socks and counting through their nationwide network of 3,000 giving partners. To those experiencing homelessness, these socks are a small comfort that make a big difference. Give a pair when you buy a pair and get 20% off your first purchase at bombas.com/relevant. That's bombas.com/relevant for 20% off your first purchase. Bombas.com/relevant. Well, Maverick City Music is an incredible group of writers and songwriters out of Atlanta. What started in 2016 as a small house church and the occasional writing camp for aspiring songwriters quickly became a place to make space for an unlikely fusion of worship styles. It's as much gospel as it is Bethel. It's impromptu. It's spirit-led. It's powerful. It's music that breaks the worship music mold. They collaborate, they have guests, it's a movement. If you don't know Maverick City Music yet, you need to, and you're about to meet them. Here's part of our conversation with Maverick City Music's Naomi Rain and Chandler Moore.
You said I'm not too far away.
As much as this like blesses people, like it blessed us first, because it was a place for us to be like, wow, like I could be myself. And as like a, just because I'm a Black female singer doesn't mean I have to be like sound like Mahalia Jackson, or, you know, like there's, and what people don't realize that even in the gospel community, there is, you know, distinction made between like the way you sing. And if you sing gospel enough, or if you have enough grit or growl in your voice, and then, you know, if you have like, I have a more, which I can go there, you know, but I have like a more of a, like a pure kind of like, you know, straight tone kind of voice. And then it's like, okay, well, you sound like you belong like in the CCM world, but then it's like, am I welcome in the CCM world? You know, there's a lot of that. But when we came on with Mav, it was just us like worshiping, and we could be ourselves. And I could, you know, growl sometimes and, you know, like just sing sweet and pure. And that was okay.
Now I can see your love is better than all the others that I've seen. And now breathing deep, I could never.
To be a little controversial. I think as just an industry, the purpose of it is to create for a certain type of audience. So I think the way the industry is set up, because of the way our nation is set up, we have different industries for different audiences. So you have your Dove Awards and you have your Stella Awards. You have, and then you have the Grammys. So it's like, we have to have categories. Well, the industry's mindset is like, yo, we have to have categories, because if we don't, people are not going to know what we want to present to them. So even like one of the first run-ins we had with Billboard, one of the first records, they tried to put it out as a gospel record because I was Black and I was on it. And we were like, why is this gospel? Like, why do you categorize this as gospel? And it's not even anywhere along gospel lines. So it's really having those hard conversations. I think the way we do is having those hard conversations with people, with the industry, like, yo, I know this is probably how you've been doing it. You, this is what you feel, but this is not what this is. And the reason I love Maverick is because the way I call it, it's so unmanicured. It's so like, you don't know what to do with it. You can't try to put it in a box. It is what it is. And it's, I think what it's doing is it's challenging those lines. Like, hey, just because a Black guy is leading a CCM song, is that, what do we do? Is it, and it's almost, it's like, it sucks that we have to have that conversation, but it's just a real, real thing that I feel like the Lord is using Maverick to like highlight, like, hey, this is a thing. Like, is music about color, or is music about what you're saying? We believe it. If you said it.
Is Maverick City Music. So we're already coming out on like rebels with a cause, you know, like we're already saying, hey, this is not what you expected. This is not what you're used to, but this is what we are. And I think that in itself speaks for itself. I don't think that we've like purposely like sat down and said, we're going to hatch a plan to like do things to make sure that, you know, it's not like a, like that. But I think that with the name, and with the types of songs that are sung, with the people who lead, you know, I think there's intention behind that. You know, we have one of like the only like brown, and when I say brown, I mean Indian, you know, worship leader. Like, you don't see that.
That was Maverick City Music. Make sure to check out their new album, Maverick City Volume 3, Part 1, wherever you get your music. All right, well, stay tuned. Up next, a slightly different version of Slices. Pick it light and pick it side. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on? You're listening to Marvin Gaye. The song is What's Going On. Well, this episode is also brought to you by BetterHelp, especially now with so much fear and anxiety and stress going on in the world. So many things are interfering with our own mental health and happiness. We've all been through seasons of life where stress and busyness weigh us down. And now more than ever, the pressures that a lot of us are feeling, we need somewhere to turn for help. That's why there's BetterHelp. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your very own licensed professional therapist. You connect in a safe and private online environment, which is not only great for the season we're in, but is also convenient even when things get a little bit more back to normal. You can start communicating in under 24 hours. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, plus you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, and you can send a message to your counselor anytime. If you want to start living a happier life today, try BetterHelp. And right now, as a Relevant Podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/relevant. Join over 800,000 people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp.com/relevant. Okay, it's time for a version of Slices. What do you have, Jesse?
Yeah, so I did want to find something like a hopeful story that's not totally goofy. But the reason I found this so inspiring, because when I was a kid, and this before we started recording today, I was telling the gang about my adventures in trying to assemble what looked to be a pretty simple driveway basketball hoop project that ended up consuming a weekend and ended with me having an oval shaped rim for reasons it's not really worth getting into. Like I told them, you need an engineering degree to erect a basketball hoop these days, you know? So anyway, like when I was a kid, we had something called the invention convention at elementary school. And I would like legit have anxiety before the invention convention. It's like, I can think of a lot of cool inventions. I just don't know how they work. Okay. Like, yeah, hoverboard. Cool. And I invented it. I don't know how to, someone else, let some nerd figure out how to make it work. A cold dough wave. You put something in there and it makes it instantly cold like a microwave. I don't have to figure it out. I'm just telling you the idea.
Cold dough wave. I think it's called a freezer. No,
instantly. You punch in. All I have to say is I'm terrible at invention. I think I'm good at invention. I'm just terrible at engineering. Right. And that's why this story really jumped out into me, because it's about a 9-year-old kid in Kenya named Steven. And Steven was watching the news. And like a lot of people, he saw, news anchors tell people how the coronavirus is spreading in communities. And, you know, he had this kind of, this kid's 9 years old. All right. And he had this revelation of like, well, a lot of the places that around my village and my community that people can regularly wash their hands require them to touch sinks and touch wells and touch all this stuff that it mm-hmm. undoes the whole process. Mm-hmm. This kid, 9 years old, okay? He invented this device and it looks pretty cool. And it has water and a soap dispenser, and the water is in a bucket, right? And it the way that he's designed it, it has a foot pedal that you can go step on the foot pedal and the soap and water dispense on your hands so you can wash it without touching anything except for the bottom of your foot. This is a 9-year-old kid, okay? And so, one, why don't we have these in bathrooms all over the world? Okay. Like everyone uses the back of the hand to turn on the sink anyway. Why didn't someone think of this a long time ago? Why aren't we flushing all toilets and doing any kind of water related thing in a bathroom with our feet? This kid figured it out. And I'm really, it's so cool that, like I said, 9 years old, this got such attention in the country that earlier this week, he was awarded the Presidential Order of Service, which is a massive award in the country. And so, he's getting national and now international recognition. Congratulations, Steven. You blew my mind with this invention. And if I ever have a house, if I ever design a house, I will have you come over and design some sort of elaborate foot pedal system for me.
There's something that will come out of this coronavirus season, like what you're talking about. Like there's some common sense sanitation things that we've just not applied that I think we will now apply, even on the other side of having to wear masks.
You know that Dyson guy? I just think things should work properly. You know, right. Who's all about like not touching stuff and just right. blasting you with air in unique yeah. ways. You know,
right.
You know, he's sitting there thinking like, this kid's figured it out. I'm sitting here coming up with like, it looks like something that blows your skin so hard, it literally like warps when I put it in that Dyson blade. Okay. Like he's invented a hand drying device from 3,000 years in the future to keep people's hands clean in the bathroom. And some 9-year old just come up with a better invention. You know, it's love like, it. Sorry, Dyson.
Love it.
Steven's in.
All right. What do you have, Jamie?
Oh, I got something. Okay. So, a friend of mine that I really respect, he's a NFL, he's an analyst for ESPN. His name's Emmanuel Acho. You guys might know him. He played here for the University of Texas.
I used to host a podcast with his brother, Sam. We had RIP Relevance doing a sports podcast. You can go back. It's still in the archives in iTunes, but yeah, Sam's a good buddy of mine. And Emmanuel's a great dude too. Great family.
Great guy. Went to our church. He lives here in Austin. And anyhow, he posted on Instagram the other day a video, and it's great quality. It's really well done. And his video is basically like, hey, my DMs are blowing up by white people saying, hey, what can I do? How can I help? Which is a whole nother subject that we could talk about. But he made this video and he answered four specific questions like, why can't white people use the N-word? Why is there riots? What's white privilege? And one more that I can't think
Jesus,
of. But I want to play
Jesus, please.
Thank you, Derek. I'm sorry. But He did such a great job with this. It's been shared over like 3 million times. And so I got a clip for you real quick.
The first question I've seen a lot of, Emmanuel, why are y'all rioting? I understand protesting, but why riot? And to that, I submit this. MLK said that rioting is the language of the unheard. For years, Black people have tried peacefully protesting, going back to 1965 and before with the Selma March, and that didn't work. And then in 2016, Colin Kaepernick, he took a knee, and that agenda got moved to a flag, which was never the goal. He just wanted to raise awareness on social injustice. So that didn't work. And so now we've seen riots because Black people and hurt people are trying to get the attention of the oppressor. They're trying to raise awareness of the oppression. I was biking around Lake Austin the other day, and there was a white girl about 15 meters ahead of me. And as I'm on my bike, I say to her, on your left, because I want to notify her I'm coming so that she can change her course of action. I get 10 meters away and I increase my voice, on your left, because she had yet to move. I get 5 meters away and she's still there, and I say, on your left, because I realize if she doesn't change her course of action, there will be a collision. And as I approach her, I yell, on your left, and we collide. My goal was never to hit her, but because she had her headphones in, she didn't hear me, and so she didn't change her course of action. I believe that that's the same thing Black people are doing now. 1960s, we're yelling, we're oppressed. But the course of action wasn't changed. And so we again yell, we're oppressed, but the course of action wasn't changed. And so again we yell, we're oppressed. And now you see the collision that's occurred in America.
It's so good, you guys. It's about 9 minutes long, and he goes through all four of those questions, and he talks about how what grief does, like the psychological effects of grief on people's lives, and we're seeing that happen. I highly recommend you go find it and watch the whole thing. I texted him this morning. I'm like, hey, are you doing this every week? He's like, I don't know about every week, but it's so good.
That really was good. All right, what do you have, Derek?
So somehow conspiracy theorists have said that Antifa has taken over the protests. I find this funny. I'll say this. There's clearly somebody or something that's in this.
Yeah.
That has sought to find selfish gain out of it. What the thing about it that trips me out is just how quick can the narrative change from, hey, people are protesting to, oh my God, they're looting and rioting and it's Antifa now. Like for some reason we have to find this boogeyman. And I think for most people, for me, I don't care if it's Antifa, Aquaman, it doesn't really matter. I thought that was really crazy though, just this how that the narrative changed so quick from protest to that. And I'll say this too, that I definitely think that there's a lot of people that are out here for selfish gain. Like you're not gonna convince me that there's not some Black dudes that was like, oh, we finna go get these Jordans real quick while everybody riding. Or that there's, you know, I don't know if you guys saw earlier, but Jake Paul was found looting. Like it's like clearly, but I don't know if that's like Antifa. I don't know who it is. I think it's just chaos, and chaos begets more chaos. But
I heard an interview.
It's crazy.
I heard an interview with the Brooklyn city commissioner, borough president yesterday on NPR. And he was talking about he'd been debriefed by riot police there every day. Mm-hmm. They're kind of tracking this stuff that they actually have seen evidence of organized outside organizations who are not associated with these protests and this movement coming in and trying to capitalize and then twist the narrative, you know, and like they're like a lot of the Molotov cocktails have been thrown at precincts in Brooklyn and stuff like that. They actually have evidence that it was done by outside people who are not associated with this movement.
Yeah.
They're not associated with the protesters who are peacefully protesting. They're coming in trying to change the narrative and distort the conversation against Black rights almost.
Yeah.
And so,
right.
Yeah.
It is crazy. I think for me, I'm just going to be honest and blunt. I think that's kind of where I'm at right now. At the end of the day, I don't really care who it is. It's just like, for me, it's just another group of white people that are doing whatever. Like, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't really matter if it's Antifa or whoever. It really sucks that people would take an opportunity. And this includes black people, like for the black people that have took this opportunity to rob the Gucci store. Like, it's really frustrating that it's like in a moment as serious as this, that something in you would make you think that selfishly to say, you know what, I'm going to take this opportunity to wreak havoc and cause carnage in something this serious. Like, I don't care who you are, black, pink, purple, orange, whatever, like, it's super trash. But yeah,
Charlemagne, 4 or 5 days ago, when a lot of the looting rioting was at its apex, and again, we're recording on Wednesday, Charlemagne the God, you know, has been talking very boldly about this in the news, and his take is that the first wave of like the rioting, beyond the protesting, but rioting, looting, was this came out of a visceral, like, we're coming out of an economic crisis. We're coming out of many things are like a culmination of anger and fear and all this other stuff. But there's this second wave that's happening that's a little bit more calculated and outside than, you know, that initial response. And he was trying to explain the first wave, like, this is just an oppressed people screaming out, like what the clip we just heard Jamie brought. But then there's this new wave that's kind of coming in a little bit more calculated, trying to turn the narrative against the point of the protest. You know what I'm saying? So it's like this weird shift of opportunism that's kind of happening. It's interesting.
And I think that, like, I was sitting here pondering, I'm like, this could not have happened. Well, it depends on what perspective you're looking at it from, but it could not have happened at the worst time. Like, people have been in the house for months. They're broke.
Right.
The government gave us a funky little $1,200 and said, you know, and people are hungry. They're starving, frustrated. And I think that's also another, I think that's where a lot of energy, even from the diverseness of the crowd. I think people are, it's not just about black rights on some level too. I think it's about people just are tired. They're scared. And they're like, we got to do something to bring peace back to our country. For sure.
All right. Well, like I said, it'd be a little bit different slices this week. So, you know, there you go. Stay tuned. Up next, we'll be out. Triumphantly,
won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs. Redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds.
You're listening to Bob Marley and the Wailers, Redemption Song. Classic. Well, last week we asked you a really stupid question of the week, and we're not going to do that. So we do want to hear from you, though. In light of everything that's going on, this week, we want to hear how you're doing. That's it. We just want to check in. We want to hear from you. Hit us up on Instagram, at Relevant Magazine on Instagram. You can message us there or post on the podcast post in the comments, or you can tweet us at Relevant Podcast. We just want to hear from you. All right. Well, on that note, many thanks to Maverick City Music for joining us. You can follow them on Instagram at Maverick City Music and listen to their albums wherever you get your music. It's phenomenal and very appropriate for this time.
Watch their videos too. Go find them on YouTube.
No kidding. Yeah, they're YouTube videos. Thanks to Prop for joining us. You can follow him at Prop Hip Hop on all social media. Make sure to check out his albums as well. His last album was an album with you, right, Derek?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And awesome. And also, do you guys have anything coming up? I know something's happening.
I do. What's going on? I do. On Friday, on my show, The Happy Hour, the Derek Miner's coming on the show with me. So.
Yes, and I had a blast on there. Like, you, I love you. Just want to let you know, I'm so glad that we met, for sure. It was a good
combo. Thank you. It's a fun show. Yeah. Yeah. It was a good conversation.
Yeah. And lastly, I have a platform that I've been building called We Own Now. So I know a lot of people have been wondering, you know, how can they engage or what's next after this? And I'm a big believer in financial literacy for anyone. And I noticed that in the Black community, there's not a lot of talks about that, or nothing's really contextualized, or it's often assumed that people know. So I built this platform called We Own Now. So if you're in conversations with people and you want to know tangible ways how you can help, definitely point people in that direction, because I think that that's what it's going to take. It's going to take us together working as a community and building up our community. So yeah, definitely We Own Now. Check that out.
That's awesome.
And also check out Relevant Daily for the latest. And we have ongoing coverage, especially this week, but we're going to be engaging these conversations long term at relevantmagazine.com. On that note, we'll wrap things up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Jamie Ivey.
And I'm Derek Miner.
We will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Relevant Podcast. Check out our features, interviews, and news updates every day at relevantmagazine.com. And make sure to follow Relevant on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram for the latest. For more great podcasts, check out our Relevant Podcast Network, featuring shows like Relevant Daily, Signs of Life, Unedited, and many more launching throughout the year.
Relevant Podcast Network.